Welcome to Go.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to Going There, the crossroads where music and mental health meet. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believes that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and medtech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com, at Janssen US, and at JNJINNOVMED on Twitter. This season of Going There is also brought to you by AbbVie, who is driving the pursuit of better mental health. Over the last 30 years, AbbVie's scientists and clinicians have worked to tackle the complexity of mental illness, and today offer a portfolio of medicines and a pipeline of innovation that spans depression, anxiety, bipolar 1 disorder, and schizophrenia. To learn more about AbbVie's work to support individuals throughout their mental health journey, please visit www.abbvie.com or follow at AbbVie on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Today, we are talking with multi-instrumentalist and songwriter Jeremiah Freites, founding member of the band The Lumineers. You may know The Lumineers from their hit singles Ho Hey and Ophelia. Their music has been described as a sweet slice of Americana that will get right under your skin. Jeremiah also has a solo career, including his most recent album, Piano Piano 2, which has been described as a lovely, therapeutic, relaxing album. So check out all of Jeremiah's tour, info, merch, and music at his label MercuryKX.com and all information about The Lumineers at TheLumineers.com. Now, on the Going There podcast, we have the tough conversations to address important issues so we can learn from each other, challenge the stigma of mental illness, and get the care we need. And one issue that many of us experience on our mental health journey is something that Jeremiah referred to as the seasons of his life. Specifically, what he discusses is how there are times in our lives where we think we've got everything figured out and other times when we feel totally lost. Oftentimes on the way up to success, there can be times when the artists will wonder, are they on the right track? Will they ever find and produce their best sound? Will they develop a fan base? And even when an artist becomes successful, that ongoing success can still feel elusive, sometimes feeling on top of the world in the charts and appreciated, and other times feeling ignored or forgotten. And this can also be the case for our mental health journey. Now, some people actually have what's called seasonal affective disorder. For example, many people experience increased depression during the winter as opposed to the summer. But even without seasonal affective disorder per se, we can feel that there are times in our lives when our mental health can fluctuate. Sometimes we feel like we have everything together. We are sleeping well, eating well, exercising. We've got a good regimen of medication and/or therapy. We may feel that we are connecting with friends and romantic partners and excelling at work and in our other interests. But then there's other times when we really feel like we're falling apart. We can't get on any kind of a healthy schedule. Our therapy and meds don't seem to be working. We feel unproductive and disconnected. And as we go through these seasons, it's understandable if we become disheartened and discouraged, even hopeless that we will never be able to have consistent stability, connection, and happiness in our lives. That's why it's so critical that we normalize having those tough seasons, to help people understand that we all go through seasons like this. In fact, many of us feel like we never go through any of the good seasons and are hoping we can eventually feel better. And Jeremiah talked about how he tries to manage these seasons by what he described as interpreting negative space as a positive void, an opportunity for him to learn about himself and how little by little he can feel better in a given moment during a tough season. Now, as we progress through this season of Going There, our goal is to bring you, the audience, further into the conversation. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions you have that have been sparked by our conversations with these incredible artists, and topics you'd love to see addressed. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. These help other folks find their way into the conversation so they can go there with us. So let's go there and listen to what Jeremiah has to say. Hey, Jeremiah, welcome to Going There.
How's it going?
It is absolutely our pleasure. So let's start off with a song that you have written that you feel like best exemplifies your mental health journey.
I'd probably have to go with a song called Spirals, which is coming out this Friday on my new album, Piano Piano 2. I would say that probably exemplifies my mental health journey, my onward, upward spirals, and of course, downward spirals and everything in between.
Now, spirals mean different things for different people. And
sure.
So both the more negative and the positive, what do those look like for you?
I feel like, you know, I'm 38. I feel like there's probably been seasons within my life where you feel like you have things figured out and you can't even imagine what it's like to feel discontent or unhappy. And then I've had other seasons in my life where I feel complete opposite, where I'm having difficulty imagining what it would like to be happy or content, or, and then, you know, I've everything in between. But I think those have gotten better over time. I think that 20 years ago when I was in my late teens, 17, 18, 19, it was much more of the darker shades of the season, so to speak. I've put a lot of work and effort into trying to be present and grateful and not so preoccupied with chasing the elusive happiness. But I think that, and that's easier said than done, of course, but I think that's my intent as I live my life.
Now, it's very interesting that you bring up this concept of chasing illusory happiness, because some people will talk about what they refer to as the tyranny of positivity, where we're always supposed to be in a good state or chasing a good state, and the goal is to suppress or avoid the more negative stuff. But that combination can be really toxic because, you know, we're built to have negative feelings sometimes to tell us when there's a problem that we have to attend to. And we're not always going to be in that really good spot. I'm just kind of curious for you, did you ever chase that good feeling and sort of be like, hey, I'm trying this, but it's just not working for me, and I kind of need to go to that more negative stuff?
Yeah, no, you have a good point. It's almost like an evolutionary thing of the idea of stress, anxiety, fear, panic. Those are actually things that can save your life in different contexts. And too much of either of any of those is not going to be good. But lack of any of those can also be detrimental. I think that for me, I think there was a period of my life, probably in my late 20s, early 30s, where I thought clearing your inbox, having nothing to do, ticking off all the boxes, clean house, good exercise, all these things, like I would just wake up one day and it would all seem figured out and I'll just be happy. And I think I've realized over my life, I think I'm the type of person that if I were to go on vacation and be on a beach and my phone was on airplane mode and there's no Wi-Fi, I think I'd probably have like a nervous breakdown after one day. That I think that unplugging works probably really well for some people. But I think for me, I've sort of grown to understand myself and who I am and what makes me tick. And I think that the more you know that about yourself, the more you can actually know how to recharge and regenerate and start to feel better. So I think that my version of happiness, very different things to you or to anybody else listening.
One of the things that you and I talked about before we jumped on the podcast was that John Cage quote about music, which is don't interpret space as negative. And if that is true in music, I feel like it's 1,000 times true in mental health. When there is stillness, when there is quiet, some people really like that. But if you're not someone who's oriented to that, it can be terrifying. Like stillness and quiet can get into lonely, empty, and hopeless pretty quickly, you know? And
yeah,
I'm kind of curious for you, like what your relationship, both in terms of your music and your mental health, is to that space.
Yeah. I mean, I think that for me to be talking about mental health and, you know, just verbalizing it, I think that sometimes it can almost give this impression to people listening, like, wow, that guy is so centered. And, you know, I feel like, ironically, the more you talk about it, though, it's better, it's healthier, and you might actually get better at doing it. I think the day that you tell yourself, well, I just got everything figured out, I'm a centered person, cruise control, that's when the wheels start to fall off. I think that's what the composer John Cage was saying. Interpreting spaces in music, you know, don't interpret it as a negative space, but interpret it rather as a positive void. And I just love that idea. I took that to mean that not only in music, but it's not that nothing's happening. It's that intentionally nothing's happening, and there's beauty in that. And I think for me, let's say even 45 minutes ago from right now, I was out walking our 2-year-old daughter, Dakota, and I was walking with her, and we were near this river where we live here in Turin, Italy, the Po River, and she was doing something really cute. And my first instinct was to take out my phone and film her. And I chose not to and just thought, I'm just going to soak up and lap up every like microscopic ounce and second of this. And it felt almost weird to go against the grain of like, I got to capture this. I got to send this to my mom or my wife or whatever. And it was just kind of this amazing stillness where nothing significant was happening to anybody else seeing that moment except for me, obviously a brief, still, intimate moment being shared between father and a young daughter. Sometimes when I'm home or when I'm on tour, you have this feeling of, well, I don't feel necessarily happy right now. It doesn't feel this like high of happiness, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you feel sad or depressed. The lack of a positive happiness or like a significant feeling one way or the other doesn't mean that you're down in the dumps doing terrible. And I think that that's really, I think as I get older, it's realizing that there's these moments that are so beautiful and they are happiness, but they're masked as boring, domesticated moments that happen every day in a rut, but they're actually the best moments you'll ever have. And I keep reminding myself, Jer, in 30, 40 years, you would give every dollar in your bank account to come back to these moments. And these are crazy moments. Our children are almost 6 and then 2. And it's like a madhouse at times, you know, it's just like, there's toys everywhere. You're stepping on Legos. You can't wait to go to sleep after you eat dinner. And there's just these moments of like, oh man, this is such a hard period. And you want to skip ahead and you find yourself, oh, I can't wait till they're in high school, which of course you're joking, but there's of course truth in that. Cause how can you be omnipresent all the time when you're exhausted? It's impossible to be omnipresent in every waking moment, especially as a young parent, or rather a parent with very young, rambunctious kids. But then there's moments where I'm like, in even as short a time as 15 years or 10 years, 5 years from now, everything's going to change so significantly. They're not going to want to hang out with, you know, dad. They're going to want to do these other things. So trying to sort of lasso and take those moments and realize like all the noise, all the chaos, all the toys cluttered about the house, all the messes, all the, you know, thumbprint and all the infinite smudges that get cleaned every day off my grand piano are actually going to be missed and, you know, romanticized in 20, 30 years from now. So yeah, trying to strike that balance of enjoying the here and now, but then also acknowledging that it's very difficult and some days it's impossible, and trying to cope with that and doing better on some days than others. Yeah.
I'd just like to request that either your next album or song be called Infinite Smudges, because I think every parent out there will immediately identify with that.
Yeah,
it's sort of something I'll tell anybody I work with is don't ever judge your marriage until your youngest is at least 5 years old. And it's based on how people differentially interpret what you're talking about. You know, if you can look at all of the chaos and the stress and the unknowing, I don't even know if that's a word, but of...
No, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, if you can interpret that as a constructive part of the process or something to be savored, at least to an extent, there's so much good that can come from that time. But between like lack of sleep and the stress and just the tension, and if two people aren't on the same page in terms of parenting, it can cause so much damage in marriages and families, because no one ever stopped and talked about like, how do we want to think about this period?
Yeah, no, that's really insightful and profound. I mean, I'm really very, very grateful and so happy and so thankful that I married such a strong person. My wife, Francesca, is literally a superhero, and she has way more patience. She does more than me. She is just really like, I don't know how she does it. And I do everything I can as a husband and as a father. And, you know, we travel a lot when we're on tour with the Lumineers, and still she finds ways to balance coming on tour and just doing so much. And she's actually helped out immensely with my solo career. You know, before we started officially talking today, we were talking about the name of my new album and my first solo album, which is called Piano Piano. And piano means many different things in the Italian language. It means a piano, which is that behind me. It means the floor, like piano one, piano two. It means to go slow, piano. Whenever you're walking in an Italian park, you're going to hear a mom or a dad probably screaming at their kid, piano, like kind of slow down. But when you combine those two words together, piano, piano, it means little by little or step by step. And I got to give credit where credit is due. My wife, Francesca, she came up with that title for the first album. And then, of course, I took it again and made Piano Piano 2 with it. But she's actually the accredited as the executive producer on this new album, too. And again, I don't know how she finds all the time and energy to do so much with me. Yeah, I just see her. She has a way with the kids where, you know, she can be as fierce as a lion when she needs to be, and then she could be as gentle as a lamb also when she needs to be. Sometimes I only know the stick and not the carrot. And it's hard, but I'm really in awe of what she's able to do day in and day out. I aspire to that.
Yeah, and that concept, little by little, similar to the concept of interpreting space, is so important, I think, to people's mental health. Because when, in a positive way, you know, and I'm sure you at some point, you know, once you discovered, oh, I have this musical gift, it's almost impossible to not think in big, grandiose ways and look to the future. And then every time there's success, it's almost impossible to not say, well, it's got to stay like this, you know? So there's all this pressure, especially when things are positive, to go big. And the little by little is often associated by some people as like, oh, that's not like a winning mentality or something like that, you know? Yeah. So it's like little by little versus going big. And the idea that the little by little is so important, those building blocks, it's sometimes tough for people to grasp, but it's so important to get into that space.
I think that if I had to sum up my career, I feel like I've had my cake and was able to eat it too. I really feel so lucky and fortunate, the amount of success and the type of success that me and my fellow bandmates in the Lumineers have seen. You know, me and the singer Wes Schultz, we started the Lumineers about 18 years ago. And I feel like it was 7 or 8 years of unpaid, unrecognized, unnoticed work. And then it was the last 10 or 11 years that it's been crazy in a lot of good ways. And I feel like through that success, we got to meet a lot of cool, interesting people, one of which was the fashion designer Paul Smith, based out of London. And we met him a handful of years ago, and he said something really interesting to us. He said, you know, when you reach a certain point in your career, instead of look up, look sideways and look laterally. And I love that idea of looking laterally and looking to the side. And I'm just so thankful that I'm not like a banker or an investor, because if you made $1 million last year, you're like, I want to make 2 million, then I want to make 10. What does that mean looking laterally? It just, you either lost or made money. And I think with art, with this type of career, it's not always, oh, I hope I get a Grammy. Oh, I hope I get recognized for an Oscar lurk. I hope, you know, you always want the shows to theoretically get bigger, but to a degree, you know, you want them to get bigger, but as long as the shows are growing with a respectable art form and not that you're selling out your soul to get just bigger shows for the sake of bigger, you know, venues and more money and all that superficial stuff. So I feel like, yeah, little by little, even doing this like solo stuff, you know, as a side career, as a parallel function of art and creativity alongside of the Lumineers, it's always trying to learn. It's always trying to improve a little bit about what I'm doing as a songwriter, about what I'm doing as a piano player, as a drummer. And I've always believed that, I sort of alluded to that before, where I think the day that you say, I'm a great musician, it's so easy, or I'm a great dad, I'm a great friend, is sort of the day that you probably are going to start to decline, unbeknownst to you, though, of course. You would never consciously be like, I'm getting so much worse as a musician and I'm fine with that. You just would lose touch and you wouldn't know when you lost touch. That's the scary part. But at some point you did, but you didn't know you did. That's probably one of my biggest fears is sort of like, you know, maybe what dementia or Alzheimer's might feel like. And that's literally one of my biggest fears is not knowing that you're slowly losing your mind or not knowing that you are slowly becoming so out of touch as a musician, as a husband, as a father, as a friend, as a parent, whatever it might be. And I think, again, little by little to striving to do the impossible, which is to write a great song, to be a great dad, to be all these things that, you know, just require so much infinite patience. And I think that whenever I start a new album, whenever I work on a new song, you know, it's like the worst thing you can do is be like, today you got to do something big. That's just, you're going to set yourself up for failure, I think. And I firmly believe that. I think that when you sit at the piano, it's like, you know, digging holes in your backyard. You're like, I might find gold, but if I don't, you better have a fun, make the most fun you can digging those holes, because you might dig 13 holes and literally not find anything, but that can't be the only object is the some sort of what represents success to you. And I think, you know, when you get into that flow state creatively, and I've heard athletes talk about this too, specifically like golfers when they're putting on the green or NBA people shooting free throws, there's that thing called flow state. I promise you, I've written my best song ideas when I wasn't aware of what was going on. Like quite literally standing up at a piano in a green room, tired, you know, got it in a rush, have like a minute and a half of time to kill, standing up and recording something that later becomes a song I love that goes for the Lumineers or something I put on my solo album. It's never like I went to the gym, I just had my cup of coffee, I cleared my inbox, I'm going to write a song that's going to change the world. It creeps up when you least expect it. And I feel like same with those moments as a parent, they seem like the moment I was explaining to you before, just I was actually kind of frustrated too, because I was actually taking a walk, trying to make our daughter sleep. She just didn't want to sleep. She didn't want to take her afternoon nap. And I was like, I'm coming back to the house, a failure. She's awake still. And this is, you know, mission failed. And then experience this beautiful moment. And I think in our lives, we can all get wrapped up in that. I call it sort of the New Year's Eve complex, where you think, ah, oh, it's New Year's Eve. It's got to be this crazy night. Perfect champagne and the feast and the buffet and the kiss when the ball drops and all that stuff. And I think I've never had a good news even my whole life. It's like some random Monday where, I don't know, something happens unbeknownst to you where you go walking in the woods with one of your friends and you have the most amazing conversation. You didn't even realize anything spectacular was going to happen in that moment. So I feel like life is chock full of those moments. It's just whether you are allowing yourself to sort of, you know, receive them and pick them up with your transmitters. But yeah.
My number one album, big shocker to me, also Folklore.
Whoa.
Are you ready to dive into all things Taylor Swift?
Good for a Weekend is the ultimate podcast for any Swiftie.
With new episodes dropping bi-monthly, as well as bonus episodes to give you real-time reactions to the latest rumors and news, it's your one-stop shop for all things T-Swift.
We also love connecting with our fellow Weekenders, so be sure to connect with us on Instagram, Twitter, and or Discord to share all your Taylor thoughts.
Good for a Weekend is available wherever you get your podcasts.
I know.
Folklore just is that. Like, it's a perfect album.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
Got what? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now? Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, it's interesting that you say this about the walk with your daughter and that feeling of failure. Because I found that as soon as my wife and I had kids, I started looking at the world in terms of three things. Two were with relationships, which is, if I was in a relationship, would I want my kids to be in this kind of relationship? And would I want them to see me in this kind of relationship? And that was frightening because I was like, wow, okay. And then the other thing, which is, I think, relevant to what you're talking about, which is just how would I want my kid or my kids to react to this moment? Like, I'm sitting here being like, I just face planted. I tanked. I failed. I got 17 different of those labels. And then I started thinking, it's like, what would I want my kids to think about this? And it started to change how I started to think about those moments. You know what I mean?
No, that's really profound. And I love that. I saw this thing. It was a clip from a talk show years ago I saw where the guy was saying, you know, especially during that time, you know, as a father or any parent out there, let's say between 7 p.m. and when the kids are actually asleep. And for some, that's between 7 and 7:30. And for the rest of the world, that's probably between 7 and let's say between 9:30 and 11 p.m. in all reality of the younger kids, you know. Every family does it different, but that's like the crazy moment where you have the least amount of energy as a parent, and some reason your kids just get all this excitement, all this crazy energy. I don't know where it comes from, but it just comes out of nowhere. It's when you're the most sort of prone to being the worst version of yourself, I feel like. And, you know, this father was talking about, he screamed at his child, like right before bed, something happened. They spilled milk on the kitchen counter. We got mad, you know. And he said, you know, imagine 30, 40 years from that moment, and your kids are older and you're all grown up, and you could teleport back to that moment. That would be the only moment you'd have with your younger kid for a brief moment. How would you act in that moment? And I always come back to that because it's so much harder to do in reality, because in the moment you have a short fuse and you're beat and you're exhausted. But I love that, just trying to think at some point, you know, this life is finite. That's categorical truth. Death and taxes, the two inevitable things that we all will experience and experience yearly. And yeah, I just love that idea of you're going to get that one moment. How would you choose to do it again? But you can't ever get that moment back. So do this one as well as possible.
That is, I really like that. It feeds into something I was thinking about midway through the parenting journey. I was thinking, all right, like, what am I trying to do here? Whenever you have that reaction, you yell or you get upset or you focus on something. And I started to realize that a lot of my parenting was designed to raise quiet, obedient, docile, non-confrontational kids who I would hate as adults. And I was just sort of like, I don't want edgy. I don't want independent. I don't want super creative, because who knows where that's going to take in terms of the structure of the day. And I started to realize, I was like, man, am I kind of going in the wrong direction here? Because that other thing seems so right to me. Like, I really do want quiet, kind, gentle kids. But I then started projecting that ahead, like you're talking about 30, 40 years. I kind of think to myself, if I was back in that moment, I think I'd want to say something that would be different, that would actually lead them to be the kind of people that I would like as adults. You know what I mean?
No, I love that. I'm a huge fan of The Office, both versions, the original version from the UK and the American one. In the American one, there's Dwight and Angela. Dwight asks his girlfriend, Angela, would you ever want to have kids? Her response is so funny. She said something like, I think I'd like to have a pair of well-behaved boys. It just was so funny to her character and kind of what you're talking about. Some people, though, I think literally go into parenting like, I want children. I hope they're respectful. Hope they never get out of line. Hope they never make a mistake. I hope they're super smart, super quiet, brush their own teeth. You know, then at some point you're asking yourself, well, do I really want kids? If those are the true objectives of the goal, you're going to be in for a rude surprise.
That's so funny, because what I love about that example is that if that's what she wants as two boys, and yet she's so into Dwight, and that there's the paradox right there. It's like, man, you are making the wrong choice.
Right.
That's what you want. Let me pivot for a moment, because one of the things that we started with was, you know, a song that represented your mental health journey. And like I said, maybe think about it, because we're talking about TV and the kind of media that people go to. And one of the things that we always like to ask people is that, you know, we talk to musicians because music is often one of the first places that people start to think about these things, as people start to confront these ideas. So as an example, for me, one of the reasons why I realized that that parenting wasn't necessarily optimal is because I generally like creative people. I interview musicians and I like people who are creative, and people have to not take the status quo. They have to push beyond limits. They have to sometimes make people uncomfortable. And so a lot of people, I think, without realizing it, just naturally gravitate towards music as the beginning of a mental health journey, because the first time that they start understanding their own feelings or thinking that there's someone out there who gets them. And so you guys obviously are people for whom a lot of people will look to for that. Who are those artists? What are those songs or albums for you that by other people that you either in the past or you still go to, whether it's during tough times or good times, whatever it is, just times, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I mean, as you were asking the question, I really thought about the lyrics I started on when I was 17, 16, 15. And bear in mind, you know, my high school teenage years were pretty rough. I mean, I lost my brother. He was 19. He died of a drug heroin overdose. I was 14 or 15 when he died, probably 15. It was my freshman year of high school. So going into high school, getting into music, discovering marijuana, almost failing out of high school, my older brother, my only sibling, passing away. It was a really brutal moment, just terrible, awful. And the type of lyrics I was drawn to were things like Radiohead Creep, you know, I'm a creep, I'm a weirdo, I don't belong here, what the hell am I doing here? Songs like Fell on Black Days by Soundgarden, and a lot of Chris Cornell's lyrics, which he was very depressed and probably self-loathing. But I was drawn to those because I did feel like an alien. I didn't feel like a good enough person. I didn't feel like I had a place. I was very just sad, for lack of a better description. There was a lot of things that I didn't really get about my place in the universe. And I think as I got older, trying to find levity, trying to find the light at the end of the tunnel, I'm trying to think of the positive lyrics that start to shine lights on me. I mean, I think that's a big reason why I got into instrumental music too, talking about my upcoming piano album. I really fell in love with a lot of cinematic, which of course, a lot of the times is heavily instrumental without words, without lyrics. And I think that that was ways that sort of like, it felt like it untangled knots inside of my head, where I was listening to Beethoven or listening to Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind soundtrack by John Bryan, or Thomas Newman doing the soundtrack for American Beauty and Shawshank Redemption. Those I found ways of literally untying knots inside of me. And, you know, when you're feeling sad or feeling lonely, or ironically, even when you're feeling good or feeling great, those types of music can personify the mood you're hoping to get out of it. You can kind of decide what you are and then extract that from the music. So I don't even know if that answers your question.
No, I think just riffing off of that first thing that you said, it's just that they're, you know, instead of saying like, I don't belong here, it's the irony of someone else saying, I don't belong here. They'd be like, oh, I don't belong here. And then the paradox of feeling like, well, maybe I do belong here if there's someone else out there who feels like they don't belong here. Because at least now there's two of us. And then if you go into a whole stadium full of people who are all singing that lyric, you start to wonder, wow, maybe there's a lot of us who don't belong here. But I don't know, maybe we all belong somewhere. And just that idea, the razor's edge of I don't belong here versus I do belong here, can lead to so many either good things or potentially problematic things. Because once you have it in your head and in your heart that you just don't belong here, the depression, the anxiety, the suicidal ideation, the substance use can all just make so much sense.
Yeah, That's the dangerous combination for sure.
Yeah. And so, you know, the other thing I will just say on a personal note on the positive side, you know, I think that, you know, I had interviewed Wes about 5 years ago, and I think it was 2019. We saw you guys in Brooklyn, and it might have been the first show that my whole family went to together. And there was, oddly, we're talking about looking sideways. We were on the side, so that was kind of cool. But there also is something, I think, with music and families, like saying, like, I don't belong here. You know, because you can wind up feeling that way in your family. Usually there's at least one person who doesn't feel like they're part of things. And going to a show and finding artists that you actually all agree on may not seem like a big deal, because it's like, okay, but your life is still the same. But just knowing that there's some music that you can find universal together is a very powerful effect. I remember going back in the car and being like, hey, we all liked that. And there's all of a sudden this sense like, oh, wow. Like, yes, we're all different ages. We're the parents, you're the kids. We're older, you're younger. But it's like, wow. Like, there's just knowing that there's that common ground, it's almost like there's a sense of belonging in a family that can start to happen through something like music or a show like The Office. You know what I mean?
Mm. No, that's really touching to hear. Thank you for that. I think that I'm going to be shuddering in fear at the thought of what my children are going to be listening to as they become teenagers. A lot of music that obviously hasn't been written yet. And then hopefully we'll find that one band, that one artist that we can all agree on and happily go to a concert and experience what you guys experienced too. I'm sure that would be a really beautiful, touching moment.
Well, I hope for you guys it's, you know, it's like our family where it winds up being your band. So that would be even cooler if you guys all agree on your band.
Well, I guess that's true. I guess we've already sort of in an obligatory way, we've all experienced that because I have to be at the shows. And then my wife and kids have seen, I don't know, probably between 50 and 100 shows already. It's really exciting now because, like I said, our son is only 5, is about to turn 6, and our daughter's 2. So it's still that really exciting moment where they love seeing the shows. They love seeing daddy on stage. And, you know, I bet in 10 years, 15 years, when they're teenagers, they're going to be like, I'm not going on tour with you. I want to stay at home with my friends, or we want to go camping, or we want to go skiing this weekend. We definitely don't want to go all the way to America or to Australia or wherever we're going to be just to see another one of dad's shows. So for now, these are probably the easy moments that I should hold on to and be grateful for.
Well, listen, Jeremiah, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. It was great getting to know you, and obviously just watching your guys' success and realizing like all the hard work that you put into and all the time you put into getting to this point. And I'm very psyched that you guys are having this level of success, and just looking forward to kind of continuing to follow your career. And I hope we get a chance to talk again.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So there it is. Jeremiah Freights and I talking about how he interprets negative space as a positive void in his life. Now, there's so much to take away from the conversation with Jeremiah, but I wanted to focus on what he said towards the end of our conversation discussing the Radiohead song, Creep. One of the reasons that song resonated for Jeremiah and for so many people is that it taps into the feeling that we are a weirdo. We don't belong here. And that idea is very consistent with what we discussed at the top of the podcast when Jeremiah discussed the seasons of one's life. Feeling like a weirdo, like we don't belong, is unfortunately so common that most people have had that experience. Some people feel this way all the time. And we are more at risk for feeling that way during one of the tougher seasons of our mental health. When we feel depressed, anxious, or in a cycle of addiction, we will feel less connected to ourselves and to others, and therefore more like a weirdo who doesn't belong, even in our own skin. Now, Jeremiah discussed two strategies that can be useful during these times. One is to validate and normalize that experience. Feeling weird or like we don't belong is painful, but unfortunately very normal. Chances are, when we are in a room of people and we feel like we are the only one who's not connected in, there are many other people feeling the same way, even if they don't show it. Just like many people not realize that we feel weird or disconnected at a given time. The second strategy we can use is what Jeremiah described as trying to make change little by little. When we feel weird or disconnected, we may want to think about small things that we can do to feel a little bit better. Can we ask ourselves, what's our best bet at something that will make us feel a bit better during this tough season? We can start with the basics, like trying to be in a regular, healthy sleep and eating schedule, getting some exercise or movement, trying to cut down on unhealthy behaviors like too much alcohol, pot, sugar, or caffeine. Then we can move to things that we may tend to enjoy, even if we don't enjoy them as much at that particular time. Maybe listening to music we like, reading books that we enjoy. If we have anyone in our life who makes us feel less weird, who makes us feel like we belong more, try to reach out to them, to text, call, or to see those people. Or we can go to places where we feel more connected, maybe parks, beaches, or music venues where we don't feel quite as much like a weirdo. And consider reaching out to mental health providers who might be in a position to help. Because on our mental health journey, those seasons of our life where we feel like a weirdo or we don't belong don't have to make us feel hopeless. They can be the time, like Jeremiah said, where we make that negative space into a positive void. I want to thank Jeremiah for this wonderful conversation. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believes that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and medtech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com, at Janssen US, and at JNJINNOVMED on Twitter. This season of Going There is also brought to you by AbbVie, who is driving the pursuit of better mental health. Over the last 30 years, AbbVie's scientists and clinicians have worked to tackle the complexity of mental illness, and today offer a portfolio of medicines and a pipeline of innovation that spans depression, anxiety, bipolar 1 disorder, and schizophrenia. To learn more about AbbVie's work to support individuals throughout their mental health journey, please visit www.abbvie.com or follow at AbbVie on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And I, of course, want to thank Consequence Podcast Network and SoundMind Live for including me in this wonderful project. And thanks to Pete Wilson and the Rooks for letting us use their song, I Know. If you are struggling with anxiety, depression, or addiction and are looking for help, please call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration National Helpline at 1-800-622-4357. If you're thinking about harming yourself and want to seek help, please contact the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. You may also go to the SoundMind Live and Consequence websites for more information. So be healthy, be safe, and be kind to yourself and others. See you next time at the crossroads.
My number one album, big shocker to me, also Folklore.
Whoa.
Are you ready to dive into all things Taylor Swift?
Good for a Weekend is the ultimate podcast for any Swiftie.
With new episodes dropping bi-monthly, as well as bonus episodes to give you real-time reactions to the latest rumors and news, it's your one-stop shop for all things T-Swift.
We also love connecting with our fellow Weekenders, so be sure to connect with us on Instagram, Twitter, and or Discord to share all your Taylor thoughts.
Good for a Weekend is available wherever you get your podcasts. I know.
Folklore just is that. Like, it's a perfect album.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see a Jew.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
Got what? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See the Podcast, Season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.